Lives Lived.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Three Lives Left podcast. I will be your host today. My name is Sam Eastwood. I'm joined by Captain Cool, Simon Townsend.
Hey.
I'm joined by the lovely Nell Wood.
Hello.
And back again is Joe Lewis.
Hello.
So, obviously, we're missing two people. We've got Dan, who's not feeling too well at the moment. But he should be back on his feet as soon as he's quite soon. And Kevin's left us for females.
Carnal relations.
Yeah.
Oh, was that what his status about Doctor Who was about?
I don't know.
I'm trying to state about Doctor Who. Was it
Kevin?
He put a Facebook status up saying educating Claire about Doctor Who.
Yeah, Claire's his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So Claire is from Holland. So
that's right. That makes sense.
She's come down and visited him. So he's ran away from work, and and they're obviously probably busy right now. So so hopefully soon both of them will be back, and then we'll have full force. So we're gonna do kick us off with the a week in geek. Joe, why don't you tell us what you've been doing?
Ooh, me. Yeah. I have been really addicted to Card Hunter, which is a browser game. It's a web-based browser game that's kind of a spoofy, but affectionate spoof of tabletop role-playing games. So what's really nice about it is that the graphics are actually made out to look like a tabletop with a wooden tabletop and bowls of cheesy puffs and beer cans scattered around the table.
This sounds amazing.
And kind of cardboard cutout looking sprites. It's fantastic. And it's a kind of dungeon crawler role playing game with sort of card based combat, kind of a mashup of Descent and Magic the Gathering, I guess. It's fantastic, though. It's very very tongue-in-cheek, very nicely done. And it just works in Chrome. You don't need a graphics card or anything, so everyone should play it. It's free to play. Go and get it now. other than that, I had a really good session of Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. Still enjoying that a lot. The latest expansion pack's come out, which is the second adventure deck called the Skinsaw Murders, which is a kind of came out around Halloween and is a kind of zombie horror themed with lots of demons, some interesting new mechanics. Busting heads against the undead. What could be better?
Cool.
Will that do? I had a great. shall I tell my fantastic? One of my all-time favourite board gaming moments happened
the other day,
which I really enjoyed. So the idea of Pathfinder is that it's a tabletop role-playing game, very like Dungeons & Dragons or the original classic Pathfinder, but they've replaced the Dungeon Master with a series of cards. So there's decks that you draw up, the top card of the deck, and that will give you your encounter, and then you roll your dice checks versus whatever comes up on those cards. So I was playing with my buddy John. John is we kind of wind John up that he's a bit of a smooth talker, a bit of a ladies man, and this particular card, when we were setting up the set, he noticed this particular card, which is the shopkeeper's daughter, which is a barrier card, so you have to roll a check in order to bypass this particular barrier. And the way the check works with her is you have to roll a wisdom check, otherwise it ends your turn because you're distracted with the shopkeeper's daughter. And she looks kind of like Christina Hendricks, who's the sexy lady in Firefly. And so John noticed this card and was like, I like her, I hope I get her. And then proceeded to draw her up and fail his wisdom check with her about six times in a row. It's hilarious. Well, he decided his character probably couldn't walk after that, so he might not be that useful in a scrap. So that was fun. And a nice gaming moment. That's me. That was my week in geek.
Cool. Nell, what have you been?
As always, I have been playing a lot of Magic because that's what I do with my life. also, I've really got into playing, Dan really got me into this game called Scribblenauts, which is just...
Oh, Scribblenauts really, is amazing.
Yeah, Scribblenauts is amazing. I love it. It's a really cool PC game where what you do is I play it through Steam, but what you do is you're like this this little boy who goes around different sort of places. So there's like in the city, in the country, that kind of thing. And you go around helping people with things, but you have to type things to create them. So, for example, like I went into an underground subway station and there was a busker and he said, oh, my band would be so much better if I had some better instruments. So you type things like drum kit and it like just falls onto the screen, and then you collect stars by sort of doing things like that, and that's really fun. Also got Assassin's Creed 4, have been playing a little bit of that. What else? Saw Thor 2, which I really enjoyed. And
well, me too, that was great. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Thor. And I've also been really into playing this iPad game, which is called Assassin's Creed Recollection, which is essentially Magic but Assassin's Creed. Which is really, it's really addictive, but really, really fun. And you can play sort of like online, but you the sort of missions are against a virtual opponent. And what I'm doing at the minute is, because I've completed all the story mode, there's specific challenges. So, for example, where you have cards with like specific abilities and bonuses, there's a round where none of the abilities count for anything. So you've got to try and win purely on the strength of the cards that you get and stuff like that. So that's really fun. And that's been my week in geek.
Cool. Simon?
What have I done? I also saw For the Dark World. I really loved it, especially as the final fight scene was in fact filmed at my university. And what else was that? I watched a third Evangelion movie. That was pretty good. As mentally fucked up as it is. What else have I done? I finally got my new Devil May Cry hoodie.
Yay.
It's like from Insert Coin. That's really good. I'm wearing it all the time. Coin. So what else have I been doing? I've also been playing Tiny Death Star on my mobile, which is a lot of fun. It's basically managing the various levels of the Death Star, like because you've got, as well as like Imperial levels, you've also got like shops and apartments for all the other people living there, and stuff like that. And you've got to interrogate rebel scum and stuff like that.
Sounds like good wholesome fun. I like
yeah,
it.
Man. I horribly always get addicted to these micromanagement like games on phone, because they're all the same. They yeah. just build more and more and manage them.
Cool. Is that it?
Yeah.
Cool. So last week we went to Joe's house and Simon and I played Cthulhu Gloom, which was awesome.
You won every single game, I think, without exception.
No, I lost one, but I won all the other ones. But yeah, but it was really, really
How many
cool.
games did you actually play though?
We played
three or four.
Okay,
but one of them was like completely by accident. I had one card where basically like you draw three cards and you have to play them on your characters like no matter what. And I basically all of them were like death cards, so I killed all three of my four characters in like the second turn. And the other card that I drew was basically allowed me to kill my other guy. So I killed everybody before anybody else could even score. So yeah. So it wasn't even my fault. I felt bad. But
listen to him. He's like, even when I'm not trying to win, I just can't help myself.
I'm awesome. But yeah, so that was fun. I also played... Joe told me about Card Hunter, which I started playing as well, which is... really, really cool. It's really funny and lots of tongue-in-cheek in there and stuff like that. I mean, it's fantastic. Over the weekend, I played quite a lot of Smite with my brother-in-law.
I played Smite. I got called a noob yesterday. I think it was yesterday. No, it was the day before. And I was just like, oh. But I think they were all just blaming me because it was quite obvious that I was new, but it was a 5v5. I can't imagine why it was just me by myself that caused us to lose.
No,
probably
no. Welcome to the world of MOBAs.
Yeah.
Everybody gives you shit.
Yeah. So I was a bit sad.
And of course, I play as Mighty Thor.
I've been playing as Sun Wukong.
Well, the thing is, the characters that I like Loki, which I need to unlock, and then I liked Zeus, but he's gone out of rotation, so I couldn't use him anymore. No, and out of the new characters, there's none of them that I'd really kind of like, yes, I like that guy. They're all just like, okay. I think I was good with Carly. She was cool. Like, just draining everybody's life and throwing blades out everywhere and stuff like that, which was really cool. And we also played some Rift, started playing some of that, which is really cool. It's very much like World of Warcraft, but I'd have to say it's quite a bit prettier, and it's less cartoony and graphic-wise and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you have, like, these rifts open up at random points during the game, so you will... you'll just be walking around and all of a sudden this giant tear just comes out for the world and everything starts rotting and decaying, or the ground starts decaying and stuff like that. And then you have these giant monsters that just come out of this hole in the middle of the air, and everybody around you just tries to kill this giant thing that's trying to teabag you, which is really cool, which is really interesting. And yeah, I think that was about it. I watched The Great Gatsby yesterday. It's not really geeky, but I watched it. Yeah, the new one. It was okay. It would have been better if it didn't have all the shitty modern music in it.
Lemon does that though, doesn't he? He just absolutely shits all over his own films with like horrible camera pop music.
The annoying thing is that they'll have simulations of somebody playing like a trombone or something in the actual film. So what he's saying is okay, the people in the film are playing music relative to the time, but the music that I'm playing you is completely fucking different.
What?
And it's not... Like, if it was just, like, a swooner just singing a new song, then I'd be like, okay, you're kind of trying to modernise it, but you're trying to stay within the taste of the film. But this way it was just like, now I've just been sucked out the fact that it's supposed to be set in this time. I'm kind of like... What the fuck is you're supposed to be doing right now? Like we watched another film and they did that. There was another film I watched and they had like new music, new lyrics being sung like olden ways, and that would have been fine. And when we were watching it at the end, we were looking through the credits and like Jay-Z was like one of the executive producers, and we're like, yeah.
What have you done, Jay-Z?
I kind of get it for like Moulin Rouge when he did it.
Yeah,
but like I mean that makes three now. They also did Romeo and Juliet as well.
Yeah, but it kind of worked, like especially with Romeo and Juliet because it was kind of still physically set in that time.
Yeah, but
it wasn't like the dialogue was still original, but it was still like in the physical setting of it. It was still set in that time, and then Moulin Rouge, it was still very tongue in cheek, kind of like.
Still that type of
flamboyancy that it had about it, but because they were still trying to lay off that they were listening to period music, not period music, but music set to that time.
30s music, sort of.
Yeah, like jazz music and stuff like that, but then having Crazy in Love playing. It was... the actual movie itself was very interesting. I've never heard of, like I didn't know the story of it at all, but it was a good film and I enjoyed it. I even liked Tobey Maguire. I think he did very well in it, even though I hate Spider-Man.
What's wrong with Spider-Man?
Spider-Man 3. He does Saturday Night Live fingers down
the Saturday thingy. Night Live.
Saturday Night Fever. Sit that one too, down fucking the boardwalk and no. The first two are acceptable. I don't mind those two, but I think the third one was so bad.
I actually went back and watched them. They're actually quite terrible. I think Tobey Maguire makes an okay Peter Parker, but it's like when it comes to being Spider-Man, he's just a bit lame.
But I think
it's Raimi. Come on. Yeah, but I love Spider-Man, that he's this douchey little kid, and Tobey Maguire's quite good at that, so.
Yeah.
You really don't like him, do you?
I don't like Spider-Man, so as well.
Well, I like Spider-Man, that's the problem.
I don't mind Spider-Man, I just don't like Peter Parker. Peter Parker's a bitch. He's just a moany little pitch. So, yeah. Anyway.
Or off Peter Parker, I don't know. He's getting okay, bit by a spider.
He's dead at the moment.
Bring him up. He's not having a great time. Come on.
Yeah, well, he's dead. It's fine.
All right.
Yeah, he got eaten by trolls or something, didn't he?
No.
The little ones, the little rubber ones.
No.
Sticky up air,
switched
like
his brain.
He got switched his brain.
The Doctor was dying of like cancer, so he switched his brain with like Peter Parker. So Peter Parker died in Dr. Octopus' body, and now Spider-Man is currently Dr. Octopus.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was Human Torch got eaten by trolls.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. But he's right. Back now.
What, Human Torches?
Yeah, Human Torches back.
Because Spider-Man was taking over for the Human Torch.
Yeah, but he's not anymore.
Yeah, all right, okay, cool. Anyway, cool. Next thing we're doing is the news blast, which Simon gracefully volunteered to do.
Reluctantly, I think.
and/or forced on. it's quite a long list, so I'm going to be like amazingly impressed if he can actually finish it in the minute that he's being given. But are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
Okay, ready, set, go.
Okay, game releases: Call of Duty: Ghosts and Wii Fit U. Game news: Minecraft Skyrim texture packs for the 360 version. Pokemon X and Y has been hacked to reveal 3 new legendary Pokemon. Call of Duty ships 1 billion copies, but is unclear on consumer sales. Blizzard Heroes of the Storm finally revealed. It's a MOBA featuring characters from the iconic franchise Warcraft, Diablo, and Starcraft. The next probably final World of Warcraft. Expansion of World of Warcraft is announced. The Warlords of Draenor. Hearthstone will be going open beta next month. Rockstar have finally handed out the online stimulus pack for GTA Online. New Lord of the Rings sandbox game announced. Shadows of Mordor. Marvel has 4 13 episode series for Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones. Netflix wants movies on its servers for 30 to 45 days after theatrical release.
Stop.
Oh, two more things.
That was my fault. It's because I mocked you for being doomed.
Yeah, I got tongue-tied on the Warlords of Draenor thing. Although, to be honest, the two trailers for Day of the Doctor is a bit like...
Yeah, the last two things is you got two trailers for Day of the Doctor.
And you've also got a mini-sode which features the Eighth Doctor... As a prequel to The Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, that's out on Saturday, isn't it?
Day of the Doctor is out on Saturday, but the mini webisode is up already where you can see Paul McGann, the Eighth Doctor, regenerate into John Hurt.
Okay, cool. And then the last one was Emma Stone and Jonah Hill are being linked to Ghostbusters 3.
If we'll ever see that movie, because it's been in development hell for about 5 years now.
Yeah, so that's... Neither here or there. Okay, cool. So let's move on to our main topic, event thing that we're going to talk about today is board games versus video games. So what are our favourite board games versus what are our favourite video games and what we think that you should be playing more. But not you should, but we would recommend you play more. That sounds a little less
invasive. Fascist.
You must play these games now, or we will find you and we will kill you. Or just get Neeson to do it for us.
Okay.
Yeah, we should.
Cool. So, Joe, you are, I think it's quite easy to say, one of the most board-gamed up guy I have ever met. I think you've got more board games than, you know, gamblies.
I've had room in my house to keep board games.
Yes. That's what it seems. I sort of swear, like, your wardrobe's, like, crushing the weight of all the board games that you've got going on. So, give us a rundown of, like, what board games that you've got, which you would recommend people to play.
Okay. I think there's kind of... board games are a bit like video games in the sense that they're not all kind of one bag. You know, your first-person shooters aren't the same as your turn-based strategy games, and it's kind of the same with board games. So probably, like, by category, I would say, for like a longer play, heavyweight kind of game. I'm really, really fond of Eclipse. That's my most sort of recent love in that kind of style of game. Eclipse is a sort of epic scale space simulation game, yeah, where you build up a space empire and then compete with your opponents to kind of, yeah, it's basically a kind of,
that is literally Civilization
race. Yeah, it's civilization
in space.
Very much so, yeah, it's that kind of feel. What I think is really nicely done about it is all the kind of economy is very elegantly designed, which makes all the kind of bookkeeping end of thing, keeping tracks of, you know, what your income and your expenditures are, is all really elegantly done using this kind of player board and a series of wooden cubes which you move around, and that kind of reveals your ingoing and outgoing expenditures, which I think is really, really nicely done, really elegantly done. And it's a really interesting game in that you've got lots of different strategies that can pay off in the long run, and all the races feel really different. I think the artwork's nice, so yeah, I love that for a kind of big heavyweight game.
I mean, I've got that on the iPad, which is really cool. And like when we were talking the other day, the other night I sat down and played it on the iPad by myself and loaded up a couple of AIs, and it's weird because it kind of forces you to be, you can either be defensive with your spaceships and stuff like that, or quite aggressive and stuff.
Yeah,
and like early game you're like, let's all be friends, and then eventually you're like, I'm now actually going to blow you up. It's going to happen.
What I love about that game, and I think is good, all really good, all games I think, but board games particularly, it's about the weight of the decisions.
So yeah,
it forces you to make tough decisions.
Yeah.
And Eclipse is brilliant for that, because you've got a very limited number of actions you can take each turn, and you'll never be able to do everything you want. So there's this constant kind of tension.
Yeah.
It's kind of nerve.
There's always something that changes during the turn. It's like, I want to do this, but then somebody else will do something, and they'll be like, I need to react to that instead of doing what I originally wanted to do.
Yeah.
And like when we were playing, like we did the you can make alliances with people, which gets you more stuff. But if you attack them, then you lose the extra.
You become the traitor.
You become the traitor.
Get negative points, which is a nice little mechanic. And I think the expansion really expands on that with you can not just go into diplomatic relations, but form a full-blown alliance and actually share your victory with someone as well.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's a great game for a heavyweight thing. Obviously, the big downside of that is it's a long play game. You know, I think they say it's 45 minutes per player, and I think probably an hour would be fairer for new players. Yeah. So if you've got like a 4 or 5 player game, you're going to be on it all night, which is, you know, it's great. It's really good fun, but you've got kind of, everyone's got to be up for it and up for the long game. I'm really distracted right now because Zoe is playing the new Saints Row and she appears to be fighting Rowdy Roddy Piper.
I just
thought I'd share that with you.
In that game.
For heavyweight games, I think that's a really good example, although there are loads of others. Then the other end of the spectrum, you've got kind of really lightweight pick up and play games. I think King of Tokyo is probably the one
I love to
tend to go to.
Oh, that was
quite a quick one, yeah.
It's lovely, it's quick, it's funny, it's got that kind of neat cartoony art style to it, which I think makes it a lot of fun and
it's quite simple to its premise though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically Yahtzee. It's just a dice rolling game where you kind of push your luck to see who can accrue points the fastest without dying by getting too greedy. Kind of laid over the top of that is a very lightweight kind of dice rolling combat type mechanic. The theme of the game is, for anybody who's listening who's not seen it, it's a kind of kaiju battle. So you've got giant monsters battling for control of Tokyo, and you're taking turns to roll and re-roll a bunch of dice to see if you can get the most points or deal the most damage to your opponents. So it's really nice. It's designed by Richard Garfield, who was the guy who designed Magic the Gathering. So it's got quite a good pedigree in terms of game design as well. It's pretty cool.
Cool.
favourites. Magic the Gathering, actually, I think, to be honest, it's a card game, but I think I would include those with board games. I think Magic the Gathering is a classic. It was my introduction to tabletop gaming. You know, I've been playing Magic on and off since I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of my life. And it is something I keep coming back to. It's incredibly elegant. I mean, it's got a punishing distribution model. The collectible card game thing is great in the sense that it means that the game constantly expands and there's always something new to see. There's literally or virtually endless possible combinations of cards, which makes it really exciting. The flip side of that is the more hooks you get, the more you want to kind of get your hands on those big power cards, and that's when you start parting with large sums of money.
Yes.
I seem to remember my favourite like Magic thing was like when I was back working at Waterstones and you bought some cards and I was just like, do you want the bag? And you're like, no, I'm just going to chop them up and snort them.
That's kind of how it works.
It is
highly addictive.
The great thing like with Magic, like when I went to Joe's house like a couple of years ago, went over like three something years ago, and Joe showed me, I saw that Joe had Magic, and I was like, I've never played Magic before, I've seen it but I've never played it. And Joe was like, that's really simple, and he showed me how to play it, and he showed me like one, we played like one game, and I was like, yes, I want.
And then Sam proceeded to feed it into his veins.
Yeah, and then, I had a lighter and a spoon, and it all went a bit blurry.
I'm kind of like patient zero.
but because of that, I used to drive another guy from work to work, because he used to live near me, and I told him, I played Magic the Gathering with my friend. He's like, oh yeah, I collected that when I was younger. I never played it, but I collected it. It's like, I probably still have some cards somewhere. And he dug around and he found his cards, and I bought a couple of decks. And then we started playing, just the two of us. And then another couple of guys at work were like, oh, what are you doing? So we're playing Magic. And we got them playing, and then I got another guy at work playing. And then I was talking to Dan, and it's like, Dan, it's like, yeah, you should try this Magic. And I showed him Magic and stuff like that as well. And then like Simon dusted off his cards as well. And now Nell's got loads of decks, and everybody in Dan's uni hall all play it as well. So Joe's like inadvertently spread this Magic tide.
I also got into Magic when I was quite young, because my dad bought it when it first came out, and we kind of played it, didn't really have anyone else to play with, no one was interested, so we kind of left it. And then obviously I got back into it because Dan got into it because Sam got him into it, kind of thing. And then I sort of, as for my dad's birthday in September, I just bought him an intro deck for the 2013 core set. And I just was like, oh, well, here you go. Enjoy. And he sort of opened it, looked through it and went, this is so much better than when I used to play it. And then went and spent £60 in Forbidden Planet. And I just kind of sat and then went, what have I started? Now I know where the rent I pay is going.
If I could find some way to get Wizards of the Coast to pay me some kind of cut for all the people that I seem to have got playing Magic.
You have made them a lot of money.
I feel a bit bad about that.
What I love about Magic is that like every single game that you can play is different. Like you could have the same two decks go against each other. Each game will be different because it's always relative to what cards you kind of generally have out, and you can make as many plans as you want, but they'll hardly ever happen the way that you want them to happen. And the different combinations of Magic and stuff like that is, as Joe was saying, like endless. I've got about 15 or 16 different decks, and they all do completely different things. No two of them are similar, and it's fantastic. I think anybody who's considered it should totally try it out and try it with your friends.
I would just slightly be reserved, be careful. If you're the sort of person who's really into stuff and you haven't got a lot of money to spare, don't go near it with a 10-foot barge because you will never leave again and you will have to sell your house.
I've been watching the Will Wheaton tabletop stuff as well. I totally recommend watching that. And he just played a game called Takanoko. Totally want that.
I've not seen that one.
It's a new one they just released last week, and Takanoko is a it's a bit more of like a family kind of oriented game instead of like a serious kind of game. And it's basically you have these little hexagons, and you get cards, and there's like a little panda that goes around eating all the bamboo, and you have to like grow stuff in certain ways, and then when it grows in certain ways you can score on the cards, and then all this type of thing. And it's really, really cool, and it's it looks a lot of fun, and Rachel and I really, really want it. And there's a,
I'm gonna have to watch that, because I really can't picture how that works.
It sounds it's a little really bit like unusual, but it's really fun. It's really, really cool. There's a little panda wandering around eating everything, and
always it's really cool. Pandas.
Yeah, man. What else we got? We got Elder Signs, which is really cool. Again, it's based on the Cthulhu mythology, not mythology, mythos, and
that's a Greek beer.
Yeah,
a very nice Greek beer, actually.
Whatever. And, but yeah,
just saying.
You're going to shut up. You have to go to a museum, and you've got like bowling dice and stuff like that to try and prevent this giant ancient evil fuck the world, basically.
Yeah, it's great. It's the dice rolling version, obviously, of the Arkham Horror, yeah. Which is a real classic board game. From originally from the 80s, which again, as they like to do, Fantasy Flight bought up the rights and then kind of re-released it with sexy artwork. Yeah. But God, they do make some nice artwork.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
They just make them want to buy everything, don't they?
Yeah,
that's a fantastic game. Really cool. We could, just quick shout out for Arkham Horror. That's a great
base. Arkham Horror is a lot of fun, and we played that with Joe and Zoe. It's fantastic because it's like an automated monster. With a lot of games, especially like with D&D, there has to be like somebody who is the dungeon master, so it doesn't technically play, but he is like making up the story and kind of progressing the story in that sense. And then if you play like the Descent, somebody has to be the Overlord, which is again the evil person, but with Arkham Horror, and especially with Pathfinder as well, which Joe was saying about earlier, that it's like everything's automated, so you just flip over a card and you read whatever happens on the card and you do it, which is really cool for like a cooperative kind of sense. So instead of like trying to dick on everybody else, everybody plays together in a cooperative mode.
Yeah, it's a bit of a happier gaming session in some way, isn't it? Because you don't like Descent. We've been playing this same campaign of Descent for like months and months, and I'm the Overlord, and all the party have got really geared now. Can't win. So whenever we get out of Descent, it's just like, well, I'll spend another hour of my life losing horribly. And I just know that's what's going to happen every time we get it out. So it's like, oh, Descent, you've broken me. I really want someone else to be the Overlord.
I'm the Overlord. I don't mind dicking on people.
I love being the Overlord. It's awesome.
Well, good. You guys can come over and squabble over who gets to be the Overlord, and I'll be I'll be a good guy for once.
Now. Shotgun. Done.
Damn it!
Because everyone kind of hates on you, like, when you're the Overlord. If you do well as the Overlord, everyone else in the room's going to hate you. If you do badly, you've just lost. You can't win.
It's okay. The other one that I really like is the Battlestar Galactica board game, which is all the fun, which you should be playing in a couple of weeks or so with our friend Pip. And he came to our house, and we watched like the pilot episode, and then we started playing it. And it's really cool because you have the potential of somebody being an evil agent within the team. So it seems like everybody's working together, but then they just try and kill you. the cards can be out at random times. So you get one set of secret cards which say if you're human or a Cylon, and then halfway through the game you get dealt out another set of cards, so everybody could be human in the first round, and then in the second round you could have a Cylon. So it puts that distrust in the air really early in the game, because you're not sure who is a Cylon and who isn't, and you don't really have any way of one Cylon knowing if the other Cylon is a Cylon. You can't. There's no way of them knowing as well. So you're trying to find your allies, and you might not have any, or you think that you do have an ally, and it turns out to be a human, and then they try and kill you as well. And it's, but it's really cool. It's
what totally happens fun. If you're all Cylons, and then surely you just all be
one. No. It's regulated, so you can only ever have.
Isn't it two at a time?
Well, it's relative to how many people you play. So if it's like a free player game, then there'll only be one.
A freeway.
Freeway with a Cylon, it probably would happen. Boltars, you know.
That definitely would happen.
But then the more people you have, so if you have like five people, then you'd have like two Cylons out. Or you can have one Cylon and one Cylon sympathizer. Sympathizer. That one. Their words.
It's easy for you to say.
Fuck you.
It's a great game.
Basically, if one side is losing, then you go, the sympathizer goes onto that side instead of going onto the winning side. So if the humans are losing out on a certain type of resource, then they'll become a human. But if the Cylons aren't doing very well, then you'll become a Cylon. So it's kind of like a nice...
But how does the person know who's doing better? Yeah.
Because there's a little dial that shows you, there's like four resources you have. You have fuel, population, food, and morale. And last couple of times we played, everybody died because everybody got really sad. They all just kind of wandered into space and just kind of went, I don't like you all anymore. But if any of them go under, like, into the red, there's like a red marking in it, then that would be losing. It's really cool.
It's a nice mechanic, that, actually, because it balances the game. It's that horrible tension that, from, like you said, from the start, there's just this horrible kind of, one of you's trying to screw me! And that is just maintained throughout.
Especially when you start getting accused of that, like, you're the Cylon, and then you get thrown in the brig and you can't get out and you can't help. I'm not the Cylon. I'm
super serious, you guys. I'm not a fucking Cylon. I'm
serious right now. I'm not the Cylon.
So what, do you actually just end up flatly out accusing people of being Cylon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Phil is amazing.
Just like, it's him. It's him. Especially if you're the Cylon, that is the best tactic. Just being like, Sam is a fucking toaster.
Yeah.
I can smell
the That sounds good. Yeah, obviously, Phil, they do really that in the show. Just like, obviously, people are outwardly accusing people of being Cylons and they don't know who what.
Yeah, Phil's really good at that because it's like, that's exactly something a Cylon would say, and just.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake, I'm not the Cylon! But it's really cool, and as I said, like, the mechanic in it is really, really
well. What I really like about the sort of the fuel and the morale gauges and stuff is I really like the element in the game of the crisis cards, which is at the end of every turn.
Yeah.
You flip over a crisis, and because obviously the very nature of the show is terrible thing after terrible thing happens, and I think just on that element, the crisis card really reflects the show, but also. With the crisis, you've got to resolve it somehow, like there and then. And I think there's obviously what's quite really reflects the nature of the show and also makes it for a really good game is obviously you can try and solve the crisis, but then obviously something somewhere else is going to suffer. Mm. And obviously there you've got that, oh my God, this crisis has happened right this minute. But then you've kind of got the overarching sort of nature of the how much food have we got? How much fuel have we got? How many people are left alive? And I think it's just like, it really, really, I think it really captures like the sort of the nature of the show really well. And I think especially with that, just that ever-present knowing of something is going to go wrong at some point in time.
Yeah.
Again, that's a bit like I was saying with Eclipse. What I think makes a really good board game is those kind of horrible decisions where you're like, I need to do both of these things.
Yeah.
And I can't do both of them, so which one do I do?
Yeah. Again, like, especially with the Battlestar, like, because you have, like, a president, you have an admiral and stuff like that, that they'll be given choices, and there's a chance that the Cylon is one of those things. So a Cylon could be given a choice, and you have to sit there and make a decision and be like, okay, I could do this, but then they'll think I'm a Cylon, or I can do this, and they'll be like, he might be a Cylon, but we're not quite sure yet because he's a tricky little fucker. So it's like you can make everybody lose morale, and you're fine, or you can get rid of a load of cards and then don't lose as much of morale and stuff. So it's like helping myself or dick on everybody else. So one, obviously losing all of my cards makes me seem like I'm being like human and not being selfish or anything like that. Or if you think that a particularly hard event is about to happen, keeping my cards would probably be more beneficial. But then people would be like, you didn't get rid of your cards, you're a Cylon, fuck you. So it's like, it's hard.
Yeah, there's the economy of bluffing is staining like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should talk about more games because
we should talk about more games. About
Battlestar for about an hour now.
Simon.
Yes.
Any games you want to talk about?
I don't know. I mean, the thing I because obviously we were saying about like video games versus like board games and stuff like that. One thing I've noticed more, like particularly when we all get together and actually play the games, is it's always a little bit more sociable when we're actually playing the tabletop game.
Hmm.
And it's like, because I mean, I remember we always used to sort of like play the Kinect and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like we'd always be still concentrating on the game, whereas like when there's a board game and stuff, we're sort of chatting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think one of the ones we had a lot of fun with was your Perudo, if we're going to accept that as well.
Ah, Perudo.
Perudo is an amazing... Joe, have I ever showed you Perudo?
Yeah, we played Perudo, yeah. That was the kind of Mexican I've got a cup game.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was two Mexicans, one cup. Probably Peruvian, isn't it? Actually,
it is
the name.
From Peru. Stephen Fry says it's the most it's the second most addictive thing to come out of South America.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry said it is true.
Yes.
Exactly.
I really like that as well because it's essentially what Perudo is. It's Liar's Dice. If you've ever seen Pirates of the Caribbean 2, you know, play it in that. And you have a cup with five dice and you shake them up and you look at what you got and you basically have to guess what is out on the table. So you think there's like five fours, five values of four, and you have to bet against each other and accuse of each other being a liar and stuff like that. And it's really cool and it's very tactical. And Rachel wins every single bloody time. It's ridiculous and it's so annoying because she does it with a massive smile on her face and you're just like, damn it.
It's interesting that one, isn't it? Because you have to bid on what you think is going to be underneath the cup, but you can't choose the same thing as someone else, which means that you can kind of, what Rachel does really well in that game is kind of just forces you to say something fucking stupid because there's nothing left to say.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh!
Yeah.
and whenever she says something retarded, she's always right.
Yeah. And then when you try and do it, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to my world, Joe.
Yeah. I was there. I played that game repeatedly and was just like, well, this is... have that slight thing of being a man where I'm just like, well, I'm not good at it, therefore this is a shit game. I had the same thing with Cthulhu Gloom the other night. I was just like, well, look, fuck off. This is the game where Sam wins all the time. I liked it better when I was winning.
So... we've done board games pretty well. I think we can accept that. Let's move on to video games. I'm going to put out my favourite video game that I've played. I'm going to say it is BioShock 1, the first one. It is my favourite video game.
Still because... yet to get Burial at Sea.
Huh? It's
come out. Burial at Sea is out.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about Infinite. BioShock 1.
Yeah.
The original OP. Amazing. I love it because the art style is absolutely fantastic. The storytelling is amazing. It's extremely tense and atmospheric, and it makes you feel all the feels at once of complete dread and being completely terrified that there's these crackheads trying to kill you. even towards the end where you're feeling like a complete badass, and then the stuff that happens in the end, which is absolutely amazing. I love the storytelling in it. I love the way they deliver the storytelling, and I apart from the fact that it's like a speechless protagonist, they kind of get away with it a little bit more just because of what actually happens in the game that you can kind of understand while this guy doesn't actually talk as much or at all. And it's absolutely fantastic, and it's really well thought out, and I love it. Absolutely love it. Number two was okay. Was all right. And
let's talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. The only thing I like about number two was like the little bit at the end where you got to play as a little sister. I thought that was really cool because it was really messed up the fact that you see how they see, and it's what is actually happening in the world, that everything's corrupt and decaying and dead and just completely filthy. But the way that they see the world is nice and lovely and rose tinted glasses and stuff, and it's all nice and okay and normal, and it's like you kind of want to protect the innocence of this little girl to actually think that this is actually the world, when in retrospect it's fucked. Which is really, it's a really interesting thing to happen. And Infinite is really cool, but I don't really associate it with Bioshock that much, just because it's a bit more of an action RPG than an actual horror
RPG.
Not RPG, storytelling type game, because there's no RPG element to it. But it's more action based than horror that the first.
Yeah, which is why I'm wondering how Burial at Sea is going to go down. Because although
apparently
it's
not great, a lot of people have like
really
bad-mapped it and said it's really not that great. So it'll be interesting to actually see how that works. Yeah, but yeah, I still absolutely love the first one anyway. But that's a very anti-sociable game. My favourite game is a game that I play by myself, and it's not something that I tried to play it with Rachel, but it's still kind of like it doesn't really work the same way.
But then you could say, like, I mean, you have your board games for the social side of things, and the video games give you something.
But there's board games which you can play by yourself, like Pathfinder, you can play by yourself, and Thunderstone Advance, you can play by yourself as well. And even Elder Signs, you can play by yourself because of the way that the clock mechanic works, that it kind of auto balances by the number of players that you have.
Nell should go next.
Oh, gosh. Get a game. Well, possibly cliche-ishly, I'm going to go for Assassin's Creed because that's what everyone is going to expect me to do.
Dun, dun, dun.
But I'm going to talk
Why
about
like
a very a very specific Assassin's Creed game. I'm going to talk about Assassin's Creed 2. It is my favourite of the Ezio games. Possibly because when I was sort of playing, I was still studying art history, and I was kind of like going around going, yep, that's blah, blah, blah. And I was like recognizing stuff while I was walking around. I was like, oh, this is so cool. Because it was like, it was just so beautifully like, it was the sort of the artwork, the way everything was designed. It was beautiful to look at. And it was like, oh, this is amazing. And like pretty much everybody else who had played one, they just went, the gameplay is so much better. Because obviously the problem with in comparison to one, the problem was with one, it was like, go and talk to this person.
Every mission was the same.
Exactly. It was go and talk to this person, go and listen on this conversation, go and pickpocket that person.
And then stab now the guy in the face.
Yeah, now go and stab this guy. Whereas with this one, there was like, you had all the stuff with like Subject 16 and all the sort of puzzles that you had to sort of that you had to solve, and there were all the little side missions and destroying the towers and just and stuff like that. And it's just I love that, because I think it was obviously there was an end to the game, and there was, this is what you need to do, and you need to go here, you need to do this, and there was an overall plot and kind of end, if you will. But there was all, I felt it was very free and sort of up to you how you sort of got there. Like, you could do all the side bits and then go and do a bit of mission and then do some more side bits and whatnot. I just think it's a really, I think possibly because of how not bad but how not quite as good one is, I think two is a beautifully executed game.
I think with 2, you can totally see the budget's been increased for it. Mm. And you can see that the team that designed it. I mean, I like 1. I really liked 1. If you kind of cut out a lot of, like, the middle-ish stuff, like, the stuff that happens with Desmond in Abstergo and stuff like that is really cool. And then the ending kind of battle sequence was really cool as well. Mm. It was revolutionary just because of... It did look beautiful when I was playing it as well. I thought it looked fantastic. And the free running element to it, it was when free running was very the in thing anyway, and then they put it into the game and it worked really well, and climbing up the buildings, it was really cool, and then jumping off of them, and then the assassinations were really cool as well. It was a very
It came out, and I thought it was going to be sort of like a successor to the Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
And I was just
yeah.
like, oh, but the jumping's like completely different in this. It's always like I don't really have to worry about like falling and whether I'm going in the right direction. I'm just, you know, whichever way I run is, that's how I'm going to go.
Yeah. And it's quite, with Prince of Persia, it's extremely linear. You have to run the routes in which Prince of Persia gives you.
Mm. Oh, but that game was so good. Sounds of Time.
It was.
Sounds of Time blew my still mind. Amazing. Really. Yeah. Like, for the PlayStation 2, it's like one of the best game, and it was absolutely amazing. But it was still very like, it even showed you where the indents on the wall were, and it was kind of like, this is where you need to go, mate. Just follow this line, and then you'll get there. It's fine. But with Assassin's Creed, it's like you have so many options. Yes, okay, you can. The requirements for a mission is to do 3 of the events, but if you do a couple more and actually read the notes that you pickpocket, then you find a way of getting to the guy easier, and then you could actually potentially stealth it, and you do have that kind of option, but not many people took the option because it was long and hard, and you can just walk up to the guy and stab him in the face, and there's not really many consequences for it.
It's interesting, because you've kind of touched on something that I find with a lot of big, particularly kind of bigger sandbox games, is I feel a bit like directionless. I don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I loved about Prince of Persia Sands of Time, because that is one of my all-time favorite games for sure, is I like that linearity of it, in the sense that it's a skill game, isn't it? It says, right, you're here, you need to get there. Go on, then. and that's beautiful. But obviously, with stuff like your classic kind of platforming game, it's essentially a platformer, and your kind of jumping puzzle platforming game was the frustration of fucking up on the last jump, being like, oh god, now I've got to do that whole thing again. And the genius was, they were just like, no, you don't. You just like rewind and have another crack at that bit, and that, which just took all the frustration out of that game. So you've got all that beauty of feeling like a boss when you do it right, without any of that hair tearing kind of nightmare of, oh god, I've got to do that whole bit again.
It does allow you to play with like less fear.
Yes, and actually, which lets you, because every now and then, what I found with Sands of Time, obviously you were using the turn back time stuff quite a lot towards the start. Towards the end of the game, you've got quite good with the controls, and you know the timing of how he jumps, and you can judge it quite well. And you just like for one shot stuff, and just like hit it running and don't stop until you get to the other end.
I'm sure this will work.
Yes,
it'll be fine. And then if it doesn't turn out to be as gravy as you thought it would be, let's try again. It's cool. Okay, so Simon, what do you think?
I was thinking. I'm trying to think because I've been playing video games for a long old time now. I'd have to say probably one that I spent like, so much time on was Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay.
Which was for the PC and the original Xbox. Nice RPG. Totally kept well away from the rest of the Star Wars like mythos. I'm going to use that word again. And basically, it had a really tight narrative, really good story, and I think I spent like so many hours. I think, although I've played it so many times, and I always end up doing the same thing. I keep saying to myself, I've got to do it. Like, I think I did Dark Side, like Light Side and Dark Side, but like the way I set up my character is always the same. I never, like, always two lightsabers, always the same, like, classes and stuff like that. It's just like, I just keep thinking every time, I'm like, oh, we should do something different. No.
Yeah, Dan's a bit like that. Whenever he plays anything where obviously you can, like, any games where there's that kind of quest element where it's like, oh, help me do this in things like Skyrim and like Mass Effect and that kind of thing, and he's always like Mr. you know, like, whiter than white, good for the people, like, well, he'll help anyone. And I'm like, can't you just do something bad just for once? Come on.
That's not Dan.
But he's like, he gets really angry at me because I'm very much like, I will do something bad, like, in terms of I will take the bad answer to the question just to be interesting. Mm. And my sort of view on combat is running, guns blazing and kill everything. And he gets really angry at me and I'm like, no, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have fun. But
yeah. I mean, it's like one of the things, like, the choices that you can make within it. For Dan, he's a white shiny knight kind of guy. He would totally make, if he was an adventurer himself, he would make those choices. He would help everybody he could. He would, and he does try and help everybody he does. That's kind of the person that Dan is, and it reflects in his gameplay. But like with me, I'm a bit more like, I get to be nice all the time at work, so I'm gonna be a dickhead in this game and just
exactly
hate on everybody. And I remember playing. Yeah. I think it was Skyrim or Oblivion, and somebody asked me a question. It's like, can you help me? Something terrible's happened. And one of the options was to laugh. So I laughed in the guy's face, and he kind of like, well, that's not very nice. And he ran off, like, crying or something. And I was like, ha! So.
No, I mean, as much as I like...
The story is Sam's a dick.
As much as I do like playing, like, the good guys in it, I do always have to go back and, like, do, like, the dickish thing, because sometimes they aren't just 10 times more hilarious, and it's just like
so much more fun.
And it's like, particularly in like Fable, they really like made it that it was just going to be fun to be like an evil bastard. You like,
you got horns and everything.
You get horns and everything. You can run up and fight in a child's face if you really want to be that low and disgusting.
<Yeah. laughs> I killed a village. It was awesome.
Yeah, or you could massacre an entire village.
It was awesome. Okay. So much fun. So, Joe.
Oh,
favorite video game.
Favorite video game. That is really hard.
You're not committed to anything.
Okay. Probably, I think in terms of the one I lost the most time to is World of Warcraft. But fuck that, because I now hate that game. So I'm gonna say Fallout 3.
Fallout 3. Ah, oh, you're choice. A good person.
It's an incredible game. What I loved about that game, there are a couple of things that I really enjoyed. I liked the VATS mechanic, system mechanic, because what that let it do was, because, you know, I've always had like a soft spot for kind of turn-based RPGs, and I remember very fondly the old kind of classic early BioWare RPGs, the Baldur's Gates and Icewind Dales and those. What they all did was have that kind of pause system so you could pause and issue orders, which kind of made it feel a bit like you were playing something turn-based, but then it would still flow naturally when you wanted to just run around and explore.
And let's not forget that that's also let you make a man's head explode.
Well, exactly. So I liked that in principle, in that it let me have that kind of thinking time, that moment to pause and kind of think about the situation, which I think really contributed to that classic RPG feel of the game. Mm. It also, just had that fantastic cinematic quality of it's always fun to watch a guy's head explode. That never gets old. It's just a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing to, we can all enjoy.
Bloody mess is like the best perk ever.
I was in that game, and this is probably why I didn't like New Vegas so much, was because the build, you talk about always having that same build in Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
I did the same thing in Fallout 3. It was the light, you know, the kind of shotguns and pistols build that you could do, and then max out your action points, and you could literally just go, shoot you in the face, shoot you in the face, shoot you in the face. Oh, you're dead!
Lasers.
Oh, were you? No, see, I went around and got all the rare guns. I had the the sawed off double barrel shotgun that you had to get off the guy called Smiling Jack, who would pickpocket you if you didn't look at him. How incredible was that? That's a great example of just.
Really awesome fat boy? The mini nuke launcher.
Yeah, yes. I think
the one that fires like mini nukes.
Yeah,
that was the best thing ever. It's one of the situations like I don't know when I'm ever actually going to use that, and I saw like a Goliath.
You use it the first time.
And I was just like, I need to shoot this giant thing of doom at that, and I shot it at this thing, and it killed it in one hit, and I was like, that was the best thing ever.
Trouble with Fat Boys is I had a tendency to kill myself along with the ride as well.
Everyone in the whole area. You're like, oh, wait, it's kind of a nuclear weapon. just an incredible game. And like, I played that game and all the expansions and particularly the Brotherhood of Steel, the last expansion, which had all those repeatable quests in it. So you could just wander around feeling like a boss, just kind of taking out super mutants and just having an explore. And I just loved that game. Like, I would just drop in for like months after I'd finished playing the game. I would just still go back and just have like a half an hour wander around the wasteland and listen to all the music. And the music! How good was the music? Incredible. Like, really genuinely like moving pieces of music. And actually, I kind of found a bit of love for a whole new kind of genre of music just from playing that game, which is pretty incredible as well. Exactly. Such a good game.
I mean, the thing I like about, like, especially with New Vegas and stuff, me and Rachel, I had to buy two copies of New Vegas when it came out because if I bought one for myself, Rachel would have stolen it anyway. So I had to buy two copies, and we were sitting next to each other with the TV set up and stuff like that, playing along, and it got to about half an hour, and I looked over to her screen, and she was completely different place to where I was. I was like, what have you done? It's like, oh, I've made friends with these people in this piece, and I've got a pet dog, and I've done all this stuff, and I'm just like, I've killed so many people. So many people want me dead right now. And it's great the fact that it's a completely different experience that you can take up each time, depending on the choices that you make and the paths that you follow. And I think the DLC is a lot more interesting for New Vegas because you have to go in. It's like a dungeon. You go into the dungeon and you play out that quest and you come out, basically. But you get a lot of equipment for it straight away, which is really cool.
I kind of had a lot of the expansions for free. It was just the last one that was just sort of like, oh, we're just going to extend the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mothership Zeta and the Pit were kind of like dungeons.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. Yeah, they kind of were. Okay, so cool. So, what we're going to do now is everybody vote what you would prefer. Okay? Joe.
Obviously, you know, the end of the world is coming, and when we are all living in our nuclear bunkers with limited power, we're probably not going to be able to play video games all the time, so I'm going to go for board games.
Oh, right. Okay, that's a logical decision there, Joe. Now?
I'm also going to go board games. Less apocalyptic, but just, I think they're more fun. In group play, which is...
Oh, yeah, all that. Also that. Yeah. I forgot about that bit.
Other people, Joe. Other people. Simon?
I'm going to be controversial and say video games. I don't know. I mean, maybe just because I like having a little bit more of a narrative that I don't have to sort of, like, make up myself or, like, just have something to play out. I mean, I am a film student. Well, not a student anymore. A film buff, I suppose is the right word to say. So, like, I like, you know, my stories and my narratives to play out in front of me and stuff like that.
And annoyingly, I'm going to go with video games as well, so we've got a tie. It's literally just the...
I did not expect that, Sam.
Yeah, I love board games. I really do love them, but I just find myself playing the video games so much more. And I do like just sitting in my pants and just playing.
You can sit in your pants and play board games.
I could, but everybody would be very uncomfortable.
True.
Well, I wouldn't be, but you, I don't know. You'd have to stare at my package and it would be weird. But
I need to ask, what is it with so many men's dreams revolving around sitting at home in your pants? Like, what is that?
It's just comfort.
Just do it. One day now, just sit in your pants and play a video game or something like that.
get a couple of cokes in. Your whole world in the new light is what it is.
It's exceptionally good when it's like a hot day or something, and it's just sort of like, oh, it's too hot, so I'm gonna strip down to my pants and just slop in my chair and play a video game.
Yeah. Cool. Right. So, hopefully,
we need a tiebreaker now.
Yeah, we've got a tiebreaker. So, I think the best way to make this decision, if everybody uses...
Thai kickboxing!
Roll for initiative!
So, Nell's just kicked Joe in the face and he's throwing a dice at her. So, if you comment on our Facebook or Twitter or review us on the iTunes and say, tell us what you think is more superior and what you prefer more and why you prefer video games or board games. And we'll chat and talk, and whoever gets there first will try and talk to you. And yes, so hope you enjoyed all our lovely talkings. Everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. And we'll see you soon. Bye. Cool.